to the Blended Science Podcast. In today's episode, I have another exciting guest. Her name is Ukuta Tomungodo. She is actually a PhD candidate in agricultural engineering. She is passionate about research, so she actually tells us a journey from working in industry and how she transitioned into academia. Without further ado, here's today's episode. Enjoy. Kutato, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for the invite.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for coming on to our show. We truly appreciate your time. And before going any further, Kutato, let's get to know who you are and tell us a little bit about your background.
So I am a lecturer under the New Generations of Academics program, and I'm based at the University of KwaZulu-Natal at the Bioresources Engineering discipline under the School of Engineering. And before I joined the university, I was working for the Agricultural Research Council. I worked there for 6 years as an agricultural engineering researcher.
Wow. Sure. So that's quite a lot of experience. Maybe for someone who doesn't know what agricultural engineering, can you tell us what it is?
So agricultural engineering is a type of engineering that involves technology development and research that is related to anything in agriculture. So the industries or the particular areas that you'll find in agricultural engineering, which is currently referred to as bioresources engineering because of the changes in the industry, the technological development. So you find areas such as water resource and water resource management. You find energy, food production and processing, forestry, transport, machinery, and waste management. So essentially, as an agricultural engineer, you are involved in developing technology or researching technology that participates or that innovations that are based in those areas that I just mentioned.
Cool. Looks like you guys are doing some exciting stuff there. You know, when I came to UKZN as a student, I only heard about agricultural engineering. I think I was a second year student because someone had to sort of transfer and go to another college to pick up certain modules. Seeing that it's probably not a well-known profession for some people, what is it that drove you into this profession, or what motivated you?
It's interesting when you're asking what drove me into it, what motivated me. I don't think I was honestly motivated to get into it. To start my BSc degree, I heard about agricultural engineering. Interesting enough, I was sitting at home in the stoop in the villages there, you know. I was sitting and there was someone who came back for the holidays from UCT. And we were talking, you know, I was doing grade 12 and they were discussing with me what they are doing, what their degree is about. And then they then told me, you know, there's this interesting degree I heard about that is done at UKZN. I'm like, what do you? And they're like, it's called agricultural engineering. Seems more interesting. I think you should consider it. Immediately, when application time comes, you know, I was like, I put it as one of my options at UKZN because at that time it was only done at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. So I put it as my option, and that was just it. There was no drive, motivation. It was me being a young person who just wanted to study and my marks allowed, so I went for it. And when you say motivation, right now, the question can be, how are you doing a PhD when you didn't even, you know, you just got into university like a typical person from a rural area, not knowing what exactly you are getting yourself into. So I worked in a research institute. Oh my God. I was like, I loved research. I developed a passion for it. And I sort of like found it more interesting for me to do research. And I decided, let me further my studies. When I furthered my studies, it was where I started seeing the motivation and drive towards what I was doing. And it became a little bit easier for me to understand and know why I'm doing what I'm doing. Yes.
Wow. I think your story is almost similar to most people. We pick up degrees. We had no clue what they are all about. And then they all of a sudden become a passion. So
yes, correct.
That's quite interesting. So now looking into what agriculture engineering is all about, I was just wondering, maybe this is an ignorant question, you know, because if you don't know much about the profession, it's always evident in the question that one asks. So are there any technologies or methods that can be used by farmers, you know, on their day-to-day practice or the stuff that they are currently using that they don't know that it's actually agriculture and engineering?
Oh, of course, there's so many. I think it comes to saying, let us just say the field is not too big. That is the honest truth in South Africa. And its footprint is only recognized where it's applied. So there are many instances in the country where you find an agricultural engineer has put a fingerprint where, in most instances, you find them operating in the water industry as well, where you find bulk water systems being designed. So that is commercial dam designs. You can find agriculture engineers who have a profile like that. So where you come with farmers in terms of benefiting in technology, irrigation systems, you know, machinery that is involving machinery that involves plowing and etc. farm operations, that is a footprint that's again where an agricultural engineer contributes. So where I've seen in my expertise where I found myself putting a footprint or making a contribution to farmers is where we were constructing or we're developing poultry houses. So that is mainly, you find agricultural engineers involved there. In grain silos, you find agricultural engineers being involved as well. Again, I found myself also developing new technologies like drying technologies for small scale or smallholder macadamia farmers. So we have really our operation benefits a community at large, and we hardly are visible. You hardly know really if some work is done by an agricultural engineer or not, but the scale is really large. The smallholder farmers, and it goes all the way to commercial services. So yeah, that's basically how far we go.
Oh, that sounds cool. And I think it's nice that you also touched on some of the stuff that you did for your master's. And I think you also are doing some of those things for your PhD. I want to go back into your master's work, where you looked at, I think it's a particular method for drying a mango.
Yes.
It's quite interesting. So in my house, we are health freaks. We don't like sugar. So at some point in our life, actually last month, we're actually contemplating on getting an air dryer. A freeze dryer for a freeze dryer so that we could dry some of the fruits because we don't like the natural sugar. But it just turns out you can't really buy a freeze dryer for home use. It's too expensive.
You can only buy an air dryer.
Yeah.
I understand. Yeah, I see.
Yeah. Can you tell us more about that work that you
did?
Yeah.
I think I like the fact that you mentioned freeze drying is expensive. So most conventional, we say conventional technologies are very unaffordable. So my interest and my passion, as I said, I became very enthusiastic with research. So, and I've really worked with South African farmers at large. I've seen myself in communities which are really poor, of the poorest. So in that was one of the drives towards why I had to, and selecting my master's and going on to selecting my PhD topic. So the drive was what can we do for the poor of the poorest, because essentially now we have really a significant move for farmers to stop being producers, but also enter the value chain, right? So for them to do that, we need processing. Processing is very significant, and preservation plays a huge role. And I believe that's why you and your wife were thinking we need to start drying our own things. Besides wanting to get powder forms, freeze drying is really useful for creating a powder form of any product that you would want to create. So the essence of my studies was there's drying technologies. We know that we use ovens, we use anything to remove moisture out of a product, but there is nothing that can be used at a larger scale for farmers. They mostly use, I think, extensively in the country and sub-Saharan as a whole, open drying, sun drying is still the way to go. So most farmers are still practicing sun drying. But the challenge now, as you know, in summer, there's extreme weather conditions. So you can't put your product for so long like you used to do back in the days. The conditions are just extreme. You put it, there's rain, big hail,
they loot them. Storm.
And they loot in the middle of it, you know. So there's so much going on. But one significant thing we've seen is that there's insect infestation of the product. The quality is not good, dust infested, everything and all that. So for them to enter the value chain, they need to produce product that have quality, right? Let's say, for example, if a farmer wants to compete with Montagu with dried products, they can't do it with, they have to think about the hygienic sense of things. So my study particularly focused on evaluating a technology that could help that part, prevent farmers from using open sun drying again. The electricity, I mean, I think I just saw the bill is going higher just a month or two ago for electricity. So the moment you start mentioning a high capital cost, high running cost of conventional technology, we can, you know, it becomes, it no longer is an option. So I evaluated something that could be used at a larger scale, which is greenhouse drying, right? So greenhouse drying is mainly just, it's a typical greenhouse. What you just use it for instead of planting crops is drying. So you make use of that. You know, a greenhouse generates high temperatures inside, and in most instances where you are planting a crop, you usually ventilate it and you find a way to keep the temperatures low. So we used the technology works in the simple way. You just use the heat that it generates inside, you dry your product. So it was such a successful way of drying. I found the product had better, it didn't have much infestation by microbes and, I mean, by like fungi, and it didn't grow mold. But it depends on the thickness that you dry. So I dried my mango with different thicknesses just to check which one was feasible. So I found that drying at 3 millimeter thickness was very feasible, because when I compared to the conventional oven, It relatively was the same time. And the good thing is, if we're talking about ambient temperatures, I tested in Pietermaritzburg, they go about 30 degrees. In a greenhouse dryer, you can get around 56 degrees inside that is generated, the temperature that can be generated inside. Again, the humidity or the moisture in the air is very, very low. You can find to be about 10% as well. So the good thing is it is a dryer, it functions optimally, and you didn't waste or you didn't need to use electricity. So that was what my master's was about.
Wow.
Yes.
So it looks like you identified a gap and you went for it. I think it's such a good lesson for someone who is thinking about pursuing postgraduate studies. You know, you don't just do studies for the sake of doing it. You found the gap, and it's actually providing solutions towards the methods that we need to be using, or the farmers that needs to be using for drying. Now, you touched a little bit about an increased bill for electricity.
Now,
and I want to take you back to your industry times. I saw a paper that you published on biogas production, and it's actually something I remember when I was doing I picked up micro in undergrad. I remember we were told about methane and production of electricity. And I was so excited. I went home and told my friends. I said, you know what, guys, you can actually create electricity from pig's fat because it's methane. At least that's the example that the lecturer used. And sometime last year, one of my friends that I gave that information, he actually said to me, Kazi, I want to take you up on that idea. How can we do it? I'm far off now. I'm now doing other things. But anyway, can you take us into your work?
All right. So I was once involved in a project which was very multidisciplinary. So it was not engineering. It was not only engineers involved. It was also animal scientists and all that. So the project was commissioned by the GIZ. The GIZ is a German-based corporation that is part of development in South Africa, right? So they commissioned the project and we were involved. And our main role in the project was to investigate how much waste is produced by the agricultural industry. So we had to look at different sectors of agriculture. We had to look at the citrus, we had to look at the poultry, what do you call it? Like you said, the pig. Different sectors of the agriculture industry. So we had to look at that and show and find or investigate how much waste they generate. So that was the main, and we had to theoretically also give a theoretical projection of the valorization potential to create electricity. As you can see, again, the drive for the project was because of the tariff, and the agriculture industry is one of the industries which really struggle because there's higher demand of electricity with processing almost every operation in agriculture. Whether someone is in production or they're in processing, they need electricity. So we're really looking into what the potential of use of generating generating electricity in by the agricultural industry of South Africa would be. So that is what we did. And how we got to publish the paper, we wanted to just present in a certain conference in France, but there was interest in our topic and what we're doing, and we're asked to actually be involved in a special issue after the that was published after the conference. So yeah, we got to publish in that special, we invited to actually publish in that special issue.
Wow, that sounds good. I would actually encourage our listeners. I actually put this paper on the show notes as a reference.
All right.
Yeah, people can actually go and have a look at the stuff that you guys did. You know, if anything, we need alternative ways of of making electricity.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. And just on that note, I also have my paper on this, on the drying, so they can see how a greenhouse dryer performs in terms of generating the conditions that it works on and the efficiency of it. I have also that something published on that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
This is great. Kuti, we are coming to the end of our interview, and we usually ask our guests to give us any words of wisdom. And looking at the fact that it's August, you are a woman in science, woman in agricultural science. Any parting words?
I'll be very specific to women, because I understand the struggles that as a woman are always women we go through, you know. So I'm just going to be very specific and address the woman audience. So I would say that, you know, through my lessons in life, I've learned there's no perfect time. There's no place of perfection in your dreams. Your dreams don't wait for perfection. So I would say to any women who's sitting and waiting for them to be a perfect candidate or a perfect person to be in a certain space or to establish themselves, there is no such. You do it with shivering. You do it with a shivering body. Your fingers. You type it with your fingers shaking. Essentially, we take the risks and we get moving. We face rejection and we struggle as women. And nobody really wants to discuss our struggles. And I would say to every woman out there, go do it. No matter how difficult it is, and I must say, I've established that you cannot on your own do it all. Always find a way. Ask people you don't know, send emails. If they don't respond, it's okay, you tried. So always strive to do what you wanted to do, and don't wait for a perfect time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much, Kutaso, for those wise words.
All right.
Thank you for your time. Thank you for your contribution. And I'm sure there's still a lot more. You are still doing your PhD. You're going to be finishing your PhD. I can only imagine the growth that we'll see in you as a scientist. And we definitely wish you well, Kuti.
Oh, thank you so much for letting me share my journey.
Yes. It's a powerful journey. Thank you so much. All right. Cheers.
All right.
And back to our listeners, this has been an inspiring conversation, and I trust you have learned a lot as much as I did. Otherwise, happy Wednesday from me. Happy Women's Month. Thank you. I'm out. Cheers. Bye.